I'm Laura Vinroot Poole, and this is What We Wore. Julie de Lebrun has been lauded as one of the most respected designers in our industry. From a decade under Miuccia Prada and Marc Jacobs, and later becoming the artistic director of Sonia Riquiel, she waited many years to step out on her own. I was honored to speak to her just a few years into this new chapter of her namesake collection. Where are you from?
So I'm French, originally from Provence, in between Aix-en-Provence and Avignon. And my family is from there. I was born there. But then my father decided to move us to California. So I grew up in San Diego. I mean, actually in inland. So between Del Mar and La Jolla.
Oh, wow.
From 8 to 18. So I feel like those were extremely important years. And but like if today when you ask me where I'm from, I am French, but I feel quite traveled.
What was the transition like? Do you remember when you moved from X or to San Diego? Do you remember like what was the hardest thing once you got there? And I know you had your siblings with you, which was helpful.
My memories, which are actually important, and I feel like they're very clear, is our mother dressed all three of us in the same outfits since we were literally born. And we wore like the Liberty print, the smocks, dresses, and all made by our grandmother or by like the couturière from the village. And so we were always identical. And I think when we arrived in San Diego and at school, we were all dressed the same. And for the kids there, this is 1980. So they felt like we were kind of from outer space. I mean, they had never seen that. And they were all wearing OP shorts and denim skirts and, and T-shirts and polos. And so literally, it's actually my older sister who said, I don't want my younger sister or my brother to dress the same as me. So we all had, and I was actually kind of upset because I enjoyed us being dressed the same or me. So we had to adapt. So we started wearing, my brother was wearing OP shorts and we were wearing denim skirts very quickly to adapt to just a very different upbringing.
I've met your mother, could not be more glamorous. I mean, she is so lovely. How did you see her style change when y'all got to California?
Well, it was quite incredible, actually. You know, I only realized this years later that her closet for me was a little bit going back to my roots and France. It was like going into France, her closet. Like, she kept everything from France. So she had, and I think that's where I learned a lot. I would spend hours and hours in her closet going through her pieces and how things were made and the quality, the fabrics, the colors, the prints. I think I just spent a lot of time there thinking that was France. She definitely adapted as well. And I think, first of all, the weather, we are close to the beach. It was like, it's much warmer, the vegetation, everything. I think she started dressing, I don't want to say hippie, but just more like more free, less structured, less lighter fabrics, prints. It was the Baudéric time. We were braiding our hair.
Oh, yeah.
Very light dresses. She adapted and started wearing denim, jeans, and
I was going to say, did she wear jeans?
She did, but she did still have a lot of dresses, but more like a little bit more bohemian. The language was also a huge barrier because we did not speak English when we arrived. And our mother did not either. And so we had to, I think kids learn really quickly. You just absorb. So we literally became fluent probably in 6 months. Our parents took much more time too. And the accent, she still has her accent.
Did anybody in your life work in the fashion industry? Was there any indication that that could be something that you could do as a career?
No one, actually. I don't know anyone. My grandmother would make us our clothes, some of our clothes, just more for, as I was mentioning, she made our smock. My mother would make the smock as well with her. I learned a lot from my grandmother. I learned how to knit. I learned how to do crochet. I learned how to sew, to do pattern, to cut. But no one was in the industry. No one was I didn't really know it was an industry. I thought it was just kind of a passion. I didn't realize it could really become a job.
While you were there from 8 to 18, did you go back and forth at all between San Diego and the south of France? Did you go for the summers or did your grandmother come to visit you?
Both, but we would go back every summer.
Yeah. And what was that like?
I mean, it was wonderful. It was as well a culture shock because I think, you know, at that time it felt so far away and culturally so different. We didn't have the information or the social media or any of that at that time. So it felt like a really, really different place. And just to travel there was, you know, 11, 12 hours. And it was just the jet lag, just the even kids my age that I was in school with, and I would see them when I would go back in the summer. They were just, the lifestyle was just extremely different. I think it was at a time where we, you know, there were different times, actually. It was interesting that how do I explain this? When I would go back, they were listening to a certain type of music. And then we would be in America and it was like so much advanced. And like, we started driving at 16. We would start going out. We had like school dances and parties at, you know, 14. It was like very advanced. And then we would go back to France and it felt like they were still like another just very like children, like still really the upbringing was really different. But then when I went back after let's say 16 17 18, that totally flipped. I felt like I was, you know, living the age and they were much more mature.
And so how did you learn about fashion school as an option for you?
As I mentioned, I was always curious and, you know, in my mother's closet and trying on the pieces. And I was already like very curious, but like not satisfied maybe with what I found around me and my ideas, my character. I always was kind of unhappy with how I could dress and like what I found. And I think a t-shirt wasn't just, I just needed to express myself, and clothing became quickly a way to express myself. And the culture, maybe the music, the culture around me was very influential at that time. And I think I was exploring. This was really an important way to express myself. And so I started making my own clothes, cutting up clothes and styling and mixing and making things. And then I think my mom got to a point where she could tell I was never like, you know, we had just dances and things where we had to wear like, you know, the prom dresses and all that. I could never, never find anything. So I was sketching, I was looking at fabrics, and she one day just took me to a seamstress, and I started making the pieces or having a seamstress sew my sketches and my designs with the fabrics that I found. So very quickly I was already fabricating things. So I was already kind of putting my worlds together, like a little bit of France, I guess it's that whole identity, those years you kind of try to, you know, understand yourself, find yourself, and I guess I needed that.
From the start, was it clear that you were good at it?
I had no knowledge of it, but I mean, in school, for sure, my friends were always asking me to make something for them as well, or they were, you know, they were curious as how I was putting things together. I definitely had a certain style that was different from other kids at school, for sure. To tell you the truth, it's really my father who noticed that I was just more and more into that and noticing that I needed to express myself somehow. And he's the one that pushed me to go to fashion school.
And so you went to Marangoni Fashion Institute in Milan?
Yes, at 18.
What was that like? That must have been a huge transition.
So again, I didn't speak the language. So I arrived in Milan. I had learned Spanish at school because in San Diego, you're so close to Mexico. But, you know, 10 years of Spanish or 8 years of Spanish in school is not like living in the country. So I arrived in Italy and I passed my exam in the summer. I literally went after graduation. So literally in the summer in July, beginning of July, I did my exam to start the school, which would have been in September. And so the summer I did an Italian language class to learn the language, and then started in September in Milan. I think the contrast, first of all, of the city, I didn't live in a city. So it was, but it was such an amazing time because it was like, it was exactly where I wanted to be. It was exactly, it was like, actually, I had asked to leave California maybe around 16, when I was 16, to go to come back to Europe, to go to France, or I didn't even think of Italy. Obviously, that was not an option. I had to graduate. And it's only at 18 that I wanted to come to Paris. But my father said, no, no, you're going first to learn another language.
Great.
You're going to go to Italy because they're so good with fabrics. It's just culturally, he pushed me to first do an experience in Italy. So I have to thank him for that, for sure.
Did your dad have any experience in the industry at all?
Not at all. No, he was in another field completely. But I think he's just he's sensitive to like cultural, beautiful things, artisans, the whole savoir-faire, and he had traveled to Italy and just loved the culture and the colors, yeah. The fabrics. So it was just a recommendation. And he thought, you know, you can always at some point go back to France. Those are your roots, your family, you know, my family was there as well. Other, you know, the rest of the family. So it just felt, he thought it was the best way to do it.
I'm maybe the only person in fashion that loves Milan.
I agree. I have to say that you have to get to know it. There's a lot of secret, like the courtyards are exactly what I always recommend my friends to visit because it's very special. I think I was there for 15 years in total.
Wow.
So, 10 years full time and then 5 years back and forth between France and Italy. So I think France and Paris and Milan. I feel very close to Milan, very close to Italy in general. I still work with Italy every day. But no, I love Milan. I totally understand.
The experience of coming back to Europe, did it feel like coming home?
It did. I think I was missing that. I felt like culturally and just the life, the upbringing, I was very, very lucky to have those 10 years in California. I mean, the lifestyle is, you know, you go to school, you go to the beach, you work after school. it's quite incredible. I'm very grateful, but I was missing something for sure. I wanted more. I wanted to explore. I think being in Europe, to be able to travel to different cities culturally for the art, for the colors, I think I just was missing that somehow. I don't know. I can't explain it, but I know since it was probably in my heart or, you know, from my younger years, I knew it existed. So I was missing it somehow. Yes.
And then after school in Milan, you went to Chambre Syndicale?
Yes.
A couple years there. Is that the program?
Yes. It was for the haute couture. It's called Moulage. It's for the haute couture. And I did that. I started working after the school in Milan. I started working in Milan and then went to haute couture program.
And who did you work for?
In Milan, I worked with Gianfranco Ferré.
Oh, wow.
When he was also in Paris with Christian Dior.
How incredible is that?
My best memories were spending hours, and days actually, doing fittings with him of muslims. We were trying all the toiles and we would... he would just cut and reconstruct. And that was extremely inspiring. And I learned so much from that, from the fittings with him. He was also extraordinary with volumes and with jewelry, his accessories.
And I remember his white shirts. Didn't he have a big, yeah, he was really famous for his shirts.
Yeah, he was good with the cuffs, with the collars, with his white shirts were extraordinary, and the detailing, the finishings, the embroideries he did. No, it was it's quite incredible. Yeah, that was an interesting time.
From there, you went back to Paris.
So after Gianfranco Ferré and Dior, I came to Paris, and I worked for Jean-Charles de Castelbajac.
Oh, wow.
And in parallel did La Chambre Syndicale de la Haute Couture.
That was crazy color, right?
Yes.
Just all sorts of mad color. And
primary colors. And He worked from his blankets from his dorm, like a security blanket, and he started designing clothes from his blankets, from his doudou, from his little animal,
his baby blanket. Yeah,
yeah,
that's so funny.
And then after that, I was called back to Italy to work with Gianni Versace.
And tell me about that.
That was a wonderful experience as well. It was something else. It was really about decoration, about colors, about, it was very sexy. So the whole the work that I was very close to the ateliers. I would work a lot with the ateliers there. This was in his home, actually, in Via Gesù in Milan. We all had to wear pencil skirts and 12 centimeter heels on marble floors and make no noise. And it was just the craftsmanship of like the ateliers, because he would drape the ateliers, and the designs were draping dresses that almost would just be held on a naked body. It was quite interesting to see how all these bodysuits that were made in like a nude tool were like invisible tool, and then everything was draped like on the naked body. It was extremely about the body. It was it was really, and the whole chain mills that were made with with metal, but of course, but with the clamps, you know, with the tools. Yeah. I would spend hours with the ateliers working with all the tools to create these forms with all the metal mesh. It was quite something.
Is there any important piece of advice that he ever shared with you?
He was very, very visual. And, you know, the shows would be on at the Ritz on the pool. We would cover the pool.
Yeah.
And just the whole experience I had there was, everything was quite extraordinary. I mean, I have some good stories. I learned a lot. He was very, very visual. So he would walk into a fitting and literally, from what we would show him from the atelier, he would just decline, like do different versions of everything, like this without a sleeve, this shorter, this in pink, this way, this. He was very, very immediate and visual.
And did you agree with him?
Yeah, I mean, I was still learning, I think. It was, I have to say this was all still a learning process. I was just taking in and learning so much from all the craftsmanship, the choices, the world of the fashion at that time. You know, this is the 90s, and it was just so, it was intense. It was so much work. It was my life. You know, this was a priority.
And so how funny to go from Gianni Versace and sexiness to Prada next.
Actually, I was also hired to go to Prada to bring a little bit of sexiness.
How'd that go?
You know, Bertelli wanted me to bring a bit of sexiness, but Miuccio Prada didn't really agree. But then it ended up, I got along with them. I stayed there 10 and a half years, and wow. It was a wonderful experience. And I think I was able to bring a little bit of femininity to the collections and to the work I did with her and him. That was, if I can say, that's probably the experience that was closer to my personal style.
Yeah.
Was Prada. And again, there I was still learning so much every day, and the way she works, the way she thinks, the way she, creates or realizes her construction of collection is just extraordinary. It's very intellectual. It's very, a lot of process thinking. It's just another way of doing it than at Versace, which is a little bit more visual and immediate. You know, all of these experiences for me actually just helped me kind of put together what I can do today and what I can do on my own today. So I really cherish and think about them all the time, actually.
Is there anything that surprised you about Miuccia?
Oh, she surprised me every day. She always liked contrast. She liked, she would be inspired by this. Sometimes it would be like an idea that she saw, really inspiring girl wearing this gorgeous jacket, but then like mini, like no shorts. So she almost had just her knickers or her underwear on. And
yeah.
and that was kind of fun and inspiring. Or she could just twist something, like she could see like a gorgeous dress and just twist it, like with an idea that made it so much more of an interesting concept, and it just made so much sense. It's difficult to just name one example, but it was just the way she thought was just so interesting, and such in a way that maybe an artist thinks too, as just a certain contrast and a certain platform of material that is used for something that's unexpected or to push things further.
And from there, Julie, you went with Marc Jacobs to Louis Vuitton, back to Paris?
Yes.
How did you know it was time to leave?
It was very hard. It was a hard decision because I was with Prada, as I mentioned, 10 and a half years. And it actually took me 6 months to really leave. My decision was because I was going to Paris. I was going to be in Paris. And I had met my husband and I had had my son. So my son was already 3 years old. And I was just working in Milan a lot. And it just got more and more complicated. I just felt like I had to be more at home, and home was Paris. And the opportunity to go to Louis Vuitton in Paris, and again, fashion in Paris is literally for me still the center of fashion. So it was an opportunity I could not pass. And to work with Marc Jacobs, I really enjoyed meeting Marc at the beginning. I just, being French, brought up in America, and then living those years in Italy, my dream was actually to work in the three languages every day. Working with Marc gave me that opportunity to work with an American in Paris. It was actually realizing my dream. And so I felt very lucky. And to work for a house like Louis Vuitton that has a craftsmanship, a savoir-faire, a whole history, a brand that's has a heritage that's just extraordinary, was really interesting and felt right at that time.
Yeah, and probably really interesting to work with. It was the beginning of his stint at Louis Vuitton, wasn't it?
This was 2008. Yeah, he had been there already for a few years, but it was a good time. It was definitely a good time. And I mean, with him, he's a showman. I mean, we did shows that were incredible. I mean, I still don't know how we managed. I mean, with the carousel, with the train, the locomotive, we then took the locomotive to Shanghai on a boat. I mean, it was quite insane what was the shows we were putting up there. I mean, the whole process, the whole creativity, the whole, again, this, the workmanship, the quality, the research, the laboratory was incredible. And I was able also to, go to New York once a month to work with him there as well. Marc is extremely generous. He was very generous with me because I was his right hand at Louis Vuitton, and I was directing the studio, their creative studio, on the women's collections, which was all the accessories as well.
Wow.
And I was so lucky that he, gave me that space. I would be the one presenting the collections in New York to the press. So I was very, very, it was such an interesting time for me, and also gave me so much more voice and exchange with I directed all the pre-collections I was responsible for. I would do the show with him, but the rest I would do with the team. It was incredible.
So I can't believe it's taken this long for me to get to Sonia Riquiel, which is when I first met you, but that was your first time being artistic director, or publicly, is that how you would say?
Absolutely. At Louis Vuitton, Marc gave me that space. So I was the creative director. He was the artistic director. And I was the creative director for the women's collections. But, when I went to Sonia Riquiel, I became the artistic director. So on the whole image, the whole creativity of the brands. And that was, for me, I mean, I had a lot of people asking me, like, why did you choose that? And I think the choice that I made to go there was extremely, it came straight from my heart, because as I mentioned from the beginning, my mother's closet was France, and she in my younger years wore a lot of Sonia Riquiel. Her wardrobe was a lot of Sonia Riquel, and it was a wardrobe. It was like an everyday, and it was a certain comfort, and it was feminine, it was elegant, and it was a woman dressing women.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of like a Miuccia Prada or a Coco Chanel in Paris. She didn't come from Paris, but she was the Parisian of the Parisians. The opportunity to take over as an artistic director for another name, for another designer, it had to fit for me. It had to, I mean, there's so many creative directors, designers that I admire, but I think for me to take over as on my own had to really make sense. And I had to feel comfortable with taking that kind of position because, you know, she was a woman designing for women. It had been 50 years. She wasn't in the house anymore. So it was kind of it was like taking further, writing the next pages of her creativity. It just felt right. And it felt, you know, I was always extremely shy, and that felt at a size that made that where I could feel comfortable about being in that position.
And were you afraid?
I was afraid, of course. But I felt like it was it made sense for me at that time.
And what did you learn about yourself as a person at Sonia?
What I learned, I think, family and values and hard working and respect. And again, this whole heritage and the story, I guess, is all very important. Maybe it's because of my story, my life,
mm-hmm.
family. You know, I have worked in a lot of brands that are held by families. I think Sonia Riquel, again, was a family. It was a French family in Paris. It was a little bit of I had a huge respect for Sonia Riquel and for her family, because it's not an easy position. And, you know, I was there when she passed away as well. It had to feel relevant and with respect. So I think it's just, I had 50 years of archives, which were so incredible and so much. I mean, she was... Her whole creativity around the brown was funny. There was, there was so much like playfulness. There was like, it was feminine. It was sexy. It was, there was just so much to play with and to do. And to, it was extremely open to so much creativity. So I had a fantastic time. I mean, it was wonderful.
And so from then, did you took a little bit of time off? Did you consult anywhere else or just take a real break for the first time?
Well, I didn't take a break, actually. I literally left and finished Sonia Riquel in March 2019 and then did my first show for my brand in July. During
really?
Yes.
How did your sister Fanalee get involved? I mean, who said, I think you should do this on your own? Or had you always been thinking that?
Well, I had had different opportunities throughout the years, but because of the experiences, the opportunities I had in these amazing houses, I never took the leap and did it on my own. I mean, I was pushed to try to do it on my own a few times, but I just felt like I was still learning so much and doing, you know, and we're in incredible houses with incredible creative forces. I was learning so much and doing so much that it didn't feel right. And this was maybe the window that opened, the opportunity to do it. And it felt like it was the right time. And it felt like my values also had changed. And it got to a point for a few years where I felt like the industry had changed and there are just more and more collections and so much product. And we're doing pre-fall, pre-collection, capsules, cruise, you know, shows, couture. I mean, it was just
crazy,
too much. And I think I had this overwhelm, like just too much product, too much stuff, too much waste, too much, too much, too much. And I, after the shows, I like literally needed like a little bit of a detox from the from the industry and from the quantity of clothes that we are making. And it just got too overwhelming. And my last show, Riquel as well, I was trying to create, you know, to take from the archives. I was doing capsules with the archive fabrics from her time from the 80s, but no one was interested. Like the marketing didn't care. They couldn't do business out of it. So they didn't like it. And I thought, gosh, this is about what she, you know, what's left over from her time. This is like, these are all treasures. So it was a bit difficult. And I got to a point where the last collection I used, I upcycled all the leftover threads from the mills doing the stripes with all the leftover colors.
Wow.
I had someone come in and help us be more sustainable and more responsible in the way we worked, using, end of stock fabrics from our mills, from all the mills around. And it just got very interesting for me. And I thought, wow, there's so many other ways to do this and to be a little bit more conscious and responsible. And so when I started thinking on my own, I thought, my gosh, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to just work from, or just make one of a kind. And that's why I got into couture, because I was doing a lot of celebrity dressing and making and designing dresses for an actress just for one night, for that one event, for that one moment, or that one that she could always kept and cherished. And I thought, that's quite special. Like, if it's not wasted, clothes cannot be wasted. And it's going back to from the beginning, I think, from my grandmother making things, I have things that I wear from my grandmother, from my mother. This whole like transmission is part of my values, is super important. I think that's all my upbringing and what I've learned throughout the years, that I thought, this is what I need to do. This is how I see things. And I think it got to a point where after 30 years in the industry, having learned, from all these incredible creative forces, I thought, okay, now this is how I have to do it on my own.
Back to Fanalee, your sister, I imagine it helped to have her by your side.
I literally just asked her I didn't force her, but pretty much I actually just said to her, okay, I'm going to do this on my own. You have to come and help me. I can say my older sister, she was always kind of protecting me. You know, you always look up to your older sister. She was always the smart one. She always traveled. I was kind of in my world, I guess, creative, but in my world. And I think I needed someone that has her feet on the ground, that kind of structured me and kind of told me what to do. I kind of always need someone to tell me what to do. Even though I like to break the rules and I end up doing exactly what I want to do on my own. But so when I asked Fanalee, I don't think she ever missed one fashion show.
Wow.
In all the houses where I worked at, she would always come to every fashion show and she would always support me, wearing the brand that I was designing at. She's a huge supporter.
Had she worked in fashion at all, or she worked in finance?
Yeah, never. So I literally said to her, it doesn't matter. You don't need to know.
Yeah.
It's just another business, but come and help me and I'm going to do it in a different way. And I think, I don't know. I just naturally just didn't think about, when you said, did you know you had an audience? I just didn't think about it just felt right. I'm kind of a person that just has I just do it. I don't know how to say. Sometimes I don't think enough maybe before I do things, but I just need them. I need it. I need this creativity. It's part of my life. It's part of my happiness. I just, I don't think I could live without being, creating. And I remember listening one time to an interview by Karl Lagerfeld, and he said, and it just made so much sense. He said, I design as I breathe.
I love that.
And I was like, oh my gosh, that's exactly what it is. It's like, I need it.
It's your oxygen.
Yeah.
What's been the most rewarding part about stepping fully into your self-expression?
I think every day is extremely fulfilling. We're taking it, slower than you can take it in like a bigger structure, for sure. We're taking the time that's needed. We're still a very niche and small company, and we're completely independent. We're private and privately owned. So it's obviously, we have to make some choices on what are our priorities. We opened our boutique an atelier about, I want to say, 2.5 years now. And that's wonderful because I have never had a shop before. And so the boutique and atelier. So I'm here working in the atelier. And I have, you know, visits and clients that come and try on, touch the fabric, try on the clothes. And I'm here to be able to guide them through, you know, how things need to be worn, how the fits needs to be. I can do alterations. I can design for them. I can create something for a special event. I mean, it's just every day is just, it's quite wonderful. I mean, there's a lot of work. It's like nonstop, which is, I guess that's a positive. We're growing little by little, but it's, you know, it's a struggle in the sense that we started in 2019. We had an amazing first collection. We were picked up by Matches Fashion exclusively, which was wonderful. We had wonderful, you know, articles. We were very supported by a lot of the press, the shops and everything. And then we hit COVID, which kind of changed all of our worlds, which we had to adapt. We were very lucky because we did have we had our clients, we had our atelier that were very, you know, supportive and were happy to wait for their orders. And we made it through. I think we were very lucky because being a small structure that maybe helped us to kind of blow by the, unfortunately, those difficult times. But, you know, where it's just a lot of work. But I think when it's a passion, I mean, I wake up every morning and I just love what I do. I think it's a passion. So, you know, of course, there's problems and things, solutions you have to find all the time, but it's quite amazing. And I think doing it on your own is, I mean, again, I'm making my own choices, you know, Funly and I, of course, exchange on everything now. And, but it's amazing. It's amazing.
Multiple articles I read in preparing to talk to you, call you one of the most well-respected designers in the industry. And I'd love to ask you a few questions about how you created that for the younger listeners that listen to the podcast. Can you tell me what the most important thing to do when working for others?
You have to listen and you have to learn and you have to work hard, working hard, doing your best. I think when you do your best is, you know, that means that you're getting things done and you're doing it the best way you can. And I think you just have to be hardworking and you have to be respectful.
How you are and who you are, you have such great relationships with everybody you have worked with. And I think that says so much about you as a person and the way you've managed your career.
I think it's for everything. It's like friendships. It's, you know, it's things in life. I think you just have to be correct. You just have to be responsible, take your responsibilities, stick up for others. You know, I think I love being part of a team and I love being able to exchange with others. And I think you're so much stronger together for sure. But you have to fight for others as well. You know, you have to be there for them and they'll be there for you. So it's, you just have to be, you have to be strong and you have to work. I think working and being responsible, I think, and doing the best you can. I mean, that's part of, those are the rules in life, no, right?
Yeah, exactly. And do you think those are some of the rules and the qualities you need to be a successful designer?
For sure. You know, I mean, creativity is, can be anything. Our industry now has become such a business. I think in the 90s, the industry wasn't as about numbers and about, you know, what it has become today. The industry's accessible to everyone now, also with social media, how, and everyone I think has that access. Before, it used to be just buyers coming to fashion show. Now it's, it's just that our industry it's opened up so much in a good way, of course, but it's beauty, everything's kind of more interacted also with lifestyle, with everything that surrounds you, not just fashion. I mean, I think that's wonderful because all those things interest me. So I love actually creating my whole surrounding around me. Like everything that I look at has to be in my, you know, things that I enjoy and things that are inspiring and things that that's all extremely important for me. I mean, I wake up and see, you know, a vintage piece that I've collected or something that it makes me happy. It kind of, all those surroundings around you are help you, you know, build your day, be happy, and to construct your work. And it's inspiring. It's important to be inspired.
You showing your collection in your house couldn't have been a better example of that. You know, it was your world. It was you all in one. And it was so generous and warm and just so you. I mean, it was an incredible experience, really.
Well, I think that goes back to what I was saying earlier. I think it felt, when I started that, now almost 5 years, you know, I have to feel authentic to myself and to my ideas. And I think it's that whole process of what we talked about from the beginning, where clothes became an expression, and little by little growing up, you start learning what you like and don't like and how, what you're like. And it's the way I can do it. It's the way that feels right for me. It's the way that I can express myself, is if I'm doing it in a certain space and where what surrounds me feels that certain comfort, I guess. You know, I've done it in different ways, and I've done shows where there was 3,000 people, and it's just why not? But it's
different.
I don't think it's right today. I feel like you have to be closer to what you're doing. You have to be more concentrated in making the right decisions, and that's the best way you can you know, be passionate and express yourself. If you're closer to the clothes, if you're closer to the finishings, if you're closer to your clients, to what you're, you know, I think it's important to have that proximity and that kind of exchange with the people that are there wearing it, trying it on, and understanding what you're doing. It's important to have that kind of exchange. I don't think you can just be that far away and just, I don't know. I feel like more and more people are needing that.
I am so excited because I know you were making clothes at this time and you were still in California. What did you wear to the prom?
Oh, that's a funny question. So I did design my dress, and I think I was influenced for sure at the time of the 80s and my mother's magazines, fashion magazines that were around, because that's all I looked at were the fashion magazines, because I didn't watch TV besides like American TV, which were, you know, the Husky Hutch or the
Starsky and Hutch.
Starsky and Hutch, or I would watch Charlie's Angels. Or
I was just going to say Charlie's Angels for sure. I can see that
Oprah
in your work.
Winfrey, you know, things like that. So I was definitely, fashion came from what I had around me, of course, my mother's closet and the magazines. And my mother loved fashion. My mother's an interior decorator or interior designer, and she has always loved fashion from ever, and my grandmother as well. So we had, you know, I was happy to have the French Vogue, the American Vogue. We had other magazines. And so I started, you know, I went to a fabric shop in San Diego, and the fabrics that I could find were literally, so I wanted a velvet and I wanted a taffeta. And so I designed a dress, and I totally forgot about this, but I guess I designed some dresses for my friends, and we all were versions of what, and I totally forgot. They reminded me this, like, we were wearing like bubble skirts and taffeta. So mine was like a shocking pink bubble skirt in a pink taffeta.
Wow.
And the top was velvet, black velvet, off the kind of covered.
Ooh.
And long sleeve and a low waist bubble skirt. So it was very, very 80s. And I don't know if it inspired like an old Saint Laurent or La Croix or...
I love it. And then sheer tights, did you have? And
I think I had sheer tights.
And like a pot de soie black heel?
I think I did. And I think I borrowed my mother's like Chanel vintage big earrings or something, like kind of like... And it was the 80s. I mean, it was like totally like, and I listened to music. Music was so influential at the time. I mean, I listened to Belinda Carlisle,
Oh, yeah.
Boy George. I mean, music, but I also liked like Led Zeppelin. I mean, I liked like AC/DC. I mean, it was like,
yeah.
Music was such an influence then.
Thank you so much for spending the time with me. And we cannot wait to have you in Charlotte. We're so excited.
Me too. It's going to be wonderful.
What We Wore is produced by Capital and Balto Creative Media. The original song, Someone So Enchanting, was composed and performed by Britt Drozda. Please follow us on Instagram at What We Wore Podcast for additional content and show updates. QueenCityPodcastNetwork.com.